Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, August 15th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
30-year Treasury yields fall below 2% for the first time.
There's just a relentless demand for bonds.
There is potential that two stents could invert as deep as 50 basis points.
The markets are craving better fundamentals.
The trade war heats up as China plans to retaliate against new U.S. tariffs.
President Trump is linking Hong Kong's unrest to trade talks with Chinese leader Xi. Plus, a standoff between a gunman and Philadelphia police is over. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Buschka. Coming up in sports, the Yankees can't get enough of the Orioles as they wrap up the most dominating season series in club history. And the Mets, they've seen enough of Atlanta.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm John Tucker.
I'm Nathan Hager. U.S. futures are falling from earlier highs. Stocks in Europe are lower. It's coming up to 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are lower by 1.5 points. Dow futures down 44 points. NASDAQ futures down almost 30. The DAX in Germany down 0.8%, while the CAC in Paris is down 0.7%. West Texas Intermediate crude oil down 1.5%, down 82 cents, $54.41 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.1%, up $1.60, $15.29.40 to the troy ounce. The euro 1.1151 against the dollar, and the yen, John, is at 105.91.
And the trade war is back on the front burner. China signaling it will retaliate against new U.S. tariffs, calling pending levies on $300 billion of goods a violation of the deal reached by Presidents Trump and Xi. Let's get the very latest from Bloomberg's Enda Curran in Hong Kong.
It's a statement from the finance ministry warning that if the U.S. goes ahead with 10% tariffs on Chinese goods, that they will have to retaliate. They're also saying that such a gesture would derail the overall negotiation. So on the one hand, this is a warning back to the U.S. that China can take retaliatory measures of its own. On the other hand, of course, it's to be expected that China would respond in this way. And the indication that we've had, according to our own reporting, are that the September trade talks remain on track for now at least. So let's see if that changes.
So far, no word from Beijing on what form that retaliation will take.
But the news has bonds rallying once again, with yields on 30-year treasuries falling below 2% after 2 and 10 years inverted for the first time since 2007. We get more from Bloomberg market strategist Garfield Reynolds.
I would argue your biggest concern would just be the 30-year yield dropping below 2%. That's enough to be worried about the picture for global growth, whether or not you've got a yield curve that's signaling something coming in a year or two.
This is the first time the 30-year yield has ever dipped below 2%, and right now it's at 1.98.
And the move does come after 10-year yields fell below 2-year yields, considered a recession indicator. Paul Siena is chief fixed income technical strategist for Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
So now the question is, one, what does an inversion of the 2s-10s truly mean to the bond market? And two, how much further can the curve truly invert? There is potential that 2s-10s could invert as deep as 50 basis points. And I think that'll be a function of how slow or not slow the Fed actually reacts to some of the things going on.
Yesterday's yield inversion drew the anger of President Trump, who took to Twitter to blame the Federal Reserve, calling Chairman Jerome Powell, quote, clueless.
Now, history tells us to expect a recession in the 18 months after a reversion, and that has traders looking for the next sign from the bond market. We get more from Bloomberg market strategist Mark Cranfield.
Probably the most serious thing is when the curve then starts to re-steepen, because that would mean that the Federal Reserve is getting very aggressive with the rate cutting, but he's probably behind the curve in terms of doing it quickly enough. So although the flattening part is important, it's actually the re-steepening that tells you that, yes, the economy is in deep trouble and probably the central bank can't save it.
All right, now we're seeing yields on the 2-year at 1.53%, the 10-year Treasury yield 1.55%.
And we've seen volatility in stocks and bonds, including yesterday's nearly 3% drop for the S&P 500. But Bloomberg FX strategist David Finnerty says panic isn't showing up in the currency markets.
The market's actually quite taken in the stride, and if you look at implied volatility using the safe haven yen, that's actually coming down today. So the market's not predicting any huge movements. Obviously, that could change if the equities continue to sell off. But currency markets have taken in the stride at the moment.
Or the yen right now trading around the same level it was a week ago. It is below 106, 105.90 right now.
And while currency markets do show little panic, alarmist headlines are hitting stocks and they may set the stage for an economic slowdown. That's according to Allianz Chief Economic Advisor Mohamed El-Arian. He spoke on Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli, heard weekdays at 5 on Bloomberg 99.1 in Washington.
We may end up in a situation where people read these alarmist headlines, they get concerned, they stop spending. As they stop spending, companies stop investing, and then we get a major slowdown.
In order to head off that slowdown, El-Arian says we need a shift in policy from governments around the world.
The markets are craving better fundamentals, and that has to come first and foremost from Europe, which has a really high risk of recession, second from China, and third from us. And that requires pro-growth policies.
El-Arian says it'll take more than just lower interest rates to restore market confidence.
Well, still, there's some confidence out there, though, with bulls pointing to U.S. fundamentals. Sylvia Jablonski is Managing Director of Capital Markets for Draxian Investments.
If you take a step back, the consumer remains strong. You know, earnings were decent. They were better than expected. We have to see what happens in the next quarter and sort of, you know, how that progresses.
And today's a big one for U.S. economic data with readings on retail sales, industrial production, and worker productivity. Let's get details from Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
Forecasters say retail sales probably rose in July for the fifth month in a row. Bloomberg Economics says online sales from Amazon Prime Day will probably offset a drop in auto sales. Industrial production, meantime, is forecast to show little change, reflecting a pullback in a factory work week. Factories have been hit by slowing global growth and White House tariffs. Then there's productivity. It probably slowed in the second quarter as GDP moderated. Also today, jobless claims, regional factory data from the New York Fed and Philadelphia Fed, home builder confidence, and business inventories. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thanks. Again, futures heading lower right now. S&P futures down almost 6 points. Dow futures down 76. NASDAQ futures down 39. Two's 10 spread 1.2 basis points. The 10-year at 1.55%. Two-year 1.53%. Again, the long bond, the 30-year below 2% at 1.98%. And the euro is at 1.1152 against the dollar. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Nate, 6:07 on Wall Street. Time now for news from around the world. And we say good morning once again to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, John. President Trump weighed in on the unrest in Hong Kong. President Trump on Twitter says Chinese President Xi Jinping is a great leader who very much has the respect of his people. Trump also wrote, "I have zero doubt that if President Xi wants to quickly and humanely solve the Hong Kong problem, he can do it." Trump ended the tweets by writing, "Personal meeting." It's unclear whether he was suggesting another summit on a trade deal. Meanwhile, on the campaign trail in Iowa, 2020 Democratic presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg weighed in on the trade war with China.
Our biggest competition is an obscure minor city of 4 or 5 million over in China somewhere. We've got to cooperate with our neighbors, not compete with them.
Numerous reports say John Hickenlooper is set to drop out of the Democratic presidential primary today. A standoff with a gunman ended more than 7 hours after gunfire wounded 6 Philadelphia police officers. The incident began around 4:30 p.m. yesterday when police attempted to serve a narcotics warrant at a home. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney was at the scene. Kenney praised police and says he was angry with federal and state politicians for preventing him from enforcing gun control laws in the city.
But they preempt us on all kinds of gun control legislation. Our officers deserve to be protected, and they don't deserve to be shot at by a guy for hours with an unlimited supply of weapons and an unlimited supply of bullets.
The standoff ended shortly after midnight. The suspect walked out of the home and surrendered to police. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
All right, Michael, thanks a lot. Coming up on 6:09 on Wall Street, time now for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And here's Rob Buschke.
Good morning, John. The most bizarre season series in Yankees history, unfortunately, came to an end on Wednesday.
Swung on and into the air to deep center. Wilkerson back on the track, looking up. It's gone! In Monument Park, Gary Sanchez, the Sanchino.
Yankees Radio 6-5 as the Bombers finish their 19-game season series with the Orioles at 17-2 after the win. They started that series 1-2. They won their 16th in a row over the O's, capping the sweep that saw them hit a record 61 home runs during that span. Yankees have a 10-game lead over the Rays and are the hottest team in the show, having won 5 in a row. Schedule gets a little tougher tonight, though, when the first-place wildcard Cleveland Indians pay a visit at 7:05. It's Adam Plutko versus Chad Green. Mets, who just a few days ago were the talk of baseball, have struggled against the Braves, falling 6-4 in Atlanta for their third loss in a row. Mets are trying to right the ship in the absence of injured Jeff McNeil, as the GM Brody Van Wagenen says their all-star going down can't be their defining moment.
Top of the lineup and the ability to, you know, to get multiple hits, it seems like every night, is a big blow. But I think that the team has shown all year some resiliency and the belief that the next guy up can contribute.
Mets are still in the crowded wild card hunt in the National League, just 3 games back. The Braves go for the sweep at 7:20. Marcus Stroman for the Mets versus Julio Teheran. In NFL news, Giants coach Pat Shurmur concurred with reporters, stressing the importance of star running back Saquon Barkley's playing time and that they may indeed withhold him from all the preseason games. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. John?
Ron, thanks a lot. With the Mets' recent winning streak, that's translated into higher advertising rates on the team's SNY Regional Sports Network. Ratings over the past 10 games, they've skyrocketed about 40%. And SNY President Steve Robb tells us the increase has prompted the network to double the price to $8,000 for its remaining inventory of 30-second commercials. And you can hear that entire interview with Robb tomorrow at 8 p.m. On Bloomberg Radio and wherever you get your podcasts. Let's follow the price action this morning. The futures in the U.S., they've all turned lower. They're higher earlier. Right now, the Dow futures down 77 points. That's a decline of 0.3%. The S&P futures down 0.7%. Down 7 points. That's down 0.2%. And the Nasdaq E-mini futures 47 points lower. That is down 0.6%. As once again, trade tensions come to the fore. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And still ahead, there's the yield curve, and then there's the data. We'll pick apart both with Yelena Shaletova, Bloomberg U.S. economist. This is Daybreak.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Nathan Hager. China's pledging countermeasures against planned U.S. tariffs. European shares and U.S. equity futures are moving lower. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 9.5 points. Dow futures down 113 points. NASDAQ futures down 56. The DAX in Germany down 1.5%. The CAC in Paris down 1.1%. The 10-year up 10/32nds, yield 1.54%. The 2-year Treasury yield 1.53%, less than a basis point spread. The 30-year still below 2%, 1.97, the yield on the long bond. West Texas Intermediate crude oil down 1.8%, down at $1.5423 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.2%, up $3.20 at $15.3090 an ounce. The euro, 1.1156 against the dollar, and the yen, 105.84. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Trump linked the unrest in Hong Kong to talks with Chinese leader Xi Jinping. In a flurry of tweets, President Trump defended his tariffs decision, praised Xi, and urged the Chinese president to humanely resolve the protests that have gripped Hong Kong for more than 2 months. Trump ended the tweets by writing, "Personal meeting." Police in Philadelphia say they have taken a gunman into custody, accused of wounding 6 officers as police tried to serve a drug warrant on a row house. In baseball, the Yankees down the Orioles 6-5. The Mets lost. The A's beat the Giants 9-5. The Red Sox and Nationals won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. It's coming up on 620 on Wall Street. Well, there's the yield curve, and then there's the data. And today's a big one for economic data. We get readings on retail sales, industrial production, as well as worker productivity. to walk us through all of this morning. We're happy to have Yelena Shalatova, senior U.S. economist for Bloomberg. How do you have a recession when data is good? Let's start with that broad question.
Not yet. I think definitely rising uncertainty about, you know, trade tensions and the whole, you know, yield curve inversion and markets reaction are raising risks to economic outlook, but we're not nearing a recession, not just yet. I think the health of the consumer sector remains the driving force of the economy, even though, you know, other sectors might be lagging. So, but having said that, it's very critical to watch the next few payrolls reports. Obviously, payrolls are always important, but they are becoming really critical just to see whether uncertainties about the outlook are filtering into hiring decisions, hiring plans. If that falters, we're going to have a trouble.
Okay, that's sort of like, that sounds like you're worried about self-fulfilling prophecy, that, you know, if all these predictors out there, then the consumer is going to say, oh, wait a second, let me rein in spending, or...
Sure, that's the biggest risk, I think. We're not there yet, but we will keep watching the labor market. That is critical.
Okay, this data dump that we get this morning, what are we looking at?
Well, you mentioned the retail sales and industrial production, and we will continue to see the divergence between the consumer sector, which remains strong, and this will probably be reflected in retail sales this morning, and weakness in business sector. Industrial production, based on hours worked, at least that we saw in the latest payrolls report, will be extremely weak. So, but most critical to watch this morning, and you didn't mention this too.
I'm sorry.
So Philly Fed and Empire surveys, these are most critical to watch this morning because the data in this survey covers the period after Trump's initial tweets about re-escalation of trade tensions.
Are, especially in the manufacturing sector, are they not spending because of concerns about what's going to happen in the future or something else?
It's called uncertainty. So when you don't know what's going to happen to policy, what happens to tariffs, you know, you'll just postpone some marginal investment plans. You just don't know. So that's why it is affecting the business sector right now.
Next week, they all get together out in lovely Jackson Hole for a confab, the Federal Reserve officials. That's going to be a very interesting meeting. Will Powell, et cetera, give us any clues?
I think it will be more interesting this year than last year, at least. Last year, it was more theoretical, talking about equilibrium levels, neutral interest rates, and things like that. They will probably have to become a little bit more practical this year, given what's going on in the markets. So just less than a month ago, Chair Powell was talking about insurance rate cuts. I think we will be watching, you know, in the debate what kind of circumstances will push the Fed to, you know, embark on a full easing cycle or even QE. What will push them to do that in a downturn?
Back to the curve inversion that we saw yesterday between the twos and tens part of the curve. Combine that with the fact that we had the long bond dipping below, well, right now, 197, so record lows for the 30-year Treasury. How do those two things add up?
Well, it is certainly reflecting fears among investors about the outlook. So what is going to happen among all these uncertainties that are building? So one critical thing is the inversion of the two-stance yield curve, which preceded every recession in the last 50 years. So the investors are asking the same question. Is recession coming this time around? And I think the risks are elevated, but we're not there yet. So we, obviously, the longer-term yields are depressed by previous QE policies. So it might be different this time around, but that certainly raises a lot of concerns.
This is all trade-related?
Well, it's also global economic environment. There are a lot of different things happening. You know, we in Q4 we're going to have probably Brexit, hard Brexit, Argentina elections, and things like that. So that is looming on the horizon, and that could potentially raise some risks to domestic outlook.
Elena, always a pleasure. We appreciate it. Elena Shiletova, the Bloomberg U.S. economist, senior U.S. economist. Again, readings on retail sales, industrial production, worker productivity. And yes, I'll mention Empire Manufacturing and the Philadelphia Fed Business Outlook as well. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. A quick look at the price action. Futures extending their declines after that headline out of China elevating the trade risk. Dow futures right now down 144. The S&P futures 14 points lower.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm John Tucker. We're brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Clients can earn 1.63% on idle cash in their brokerage account. Restrictions apply. Visit ibkr.com/yib to learn more.
And we're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. The trade war is back on the front burner. China signaling it will retaliate against new tariffs from the U.S. Beijing calls planned levies on $300 billion of goods a violation of a deal reached by Presidents Trump and Xi. We get reaction from Dennis Gartman, economist and publisher of the Gartman Letter.
Xi had to make some sort of response, and we shouldn't be surprised by that. Now, what is interesting is how quickly the futures markets here in the United States, and not just the Dow futures, not just the S&P, but gold and the dollar moved. We had the Dow up 250 futures points from the close, and next thing you know, they were trading 15 and 20 points lower. It's really quite extraordinary how fast things move these days.
Well, that news pushed U.S. stock futures lower and did send yields on the 30-year bond below 2% after 2s and 10-year yields inverted yesterday for the first time since 2007. Let's get more from Bloomberg Markets reporter Christina Kino.
The debate has turned from whether yield curve flattening or inversion signals a recession to the time frame for when that recession is going to come. And so it's not so much the current inverted state of the yield curve that signals an imminent recession. It is the steepening that follows. Now, the question is, how fast are we going to see that subsequent re-steepening of the yield curve, and how painful is it going to be for a lot of people right now who have gone very long into the bond market?
And right now, the yield on the 30-year bond in the U.S., 1.97%. The yield on the 10-year is at 1.53%, the 2-year, 1.52%.
Now, negative yielding debt around the world has hit a record $16 trillion as demand for bonds shows no sign of slowing. We get details from Bloomberg Market strategist Garfield Reynolds.
There's just a relentless demand for bonds, and that tells you investors are focusing massively on a guaranteed return of capital, not return on, but return of. When it gets right down to it, what does negative yield debt offer you? Well, if nothing else, you know the limits of your loss.
Well, President Trump says that China isn't the problem facing the U.S. economy. It's the Federal Reserve. He says the Fed raised rates too much and too fast, and now is too slow to cut them. President Trump on Twitter called Chairman Jay Powell, quote, clueless.
As for how stocks are faring at the moment, they are headed lower, with S&P futures down 13 points, Dow futures down 136, NASDAQ futures down 68 points. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
And 6:33 on Wall Street, let's get news from around the world this morning. We say good morning once again to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
John, thank you very much. President Donald Trump linked Hong Kong's unrest to talks with Chinese leader Xi Jinping. In a flurry of tweets, Trump defended his tariffs decisions, praised Xi, and urged the Chinese president to humanely resolve the protests that have gripped Hong Kong for more than 2 months. He ended the post writing, personal meeting. Authorities say a gunman who barricaded himself for hours inside a Philadelphia home, shooting at and wounding six officers, is in police custody. Officers were serving a narcotics warrant at a home and had already entered when gunfire erupted. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney says he's angry he could not enforce gun control laws in his city.
It's aggravating, it's saddening, And it's just something that we need to do something about. And if the state and federal government don't want to stand up to the NRA and some other folks, then let us police ourselves.
All six officers have been released from the hospital. The mystery deepens in the death of accused sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. The Washington Post reports an autopsy found that Epstein sustained multiple breaks in his neck bones. Among the bones broken in the late financier's neck was the hyoid bone located near the Adam's apple for men. The Post, citing forensic experts, reports while such fractures can occur in those who hang themselves, especially if they are older, they are more common in victims of homicide by strangulation. A vaping industry group has sued the U.S. government to delay an upcoming review of thousands of e-cigarettes on the market. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
The legal challenge by the Vapor Technology Association is the latest hurdle in the Food and Drug Administration's years-long effort to regulate the multi-billion-dollar vaping industry, which includes makers and retailers of e-cigarette devices and flavored solutions. In recent years, health authorities have warned of an epidemic of vaping by underage teenagers, particularly leading brand Juul, known for its high nicotine content, easy-to-conceal device, which resembles a flash drive. Vaping executives have long said that companies will not be able to afford to conduct large, expensive studies needed for FDA review. The FDA declined to comment on the lawsuit. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Republican Congressman Steve King of Iowa is facing new calls to resign after he questioned whether humanity would even exist without rape and incest. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air, and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Thank you, Michael. 6:36 on Wall Street. That's time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And here's Rob Bushka.
Good morning, John. It's been said that all good things must come to an end. Case in point, the New York-Baltimore season series, as the Yankees capped a 6-5 win and sweep at the stadium, finishing the season series on a 16-game dominating win streak against their division foes. New York went 17-2 against Baltimore after starting 1-2, en route to hitting 61 home runs. That's a series record. Even skipper Aaron Boone was impressed.
Things got to line up a little bit for you, but it's also a credit to our guys. And I think the quality of team that we are.
Gary Sanchez homered in the win. New York leads the East by 10 over Tampa Bay, and they put the best record in the AL up against the top wildcard Cleveland Indians tonight at 7 from the stadium. Chad Green entertains Adam Plutko. Mets, meanwhile, they're hoping the season series with Atlanta is over, but it's not.
First pitch to Flowers. Ground ball right side. Going hard to his right, Alonso. He can't get it. Tejada does. He has nowhere to go with it. And everybody's safe. That's an RBI base hit for Tyler Flowers of the Braves regain.
Braves radio 6-4. Atlanta wins it, taking the first two of the three-game set. New York falls to 4-8 in the season series. Tonight at 7:20, Julio Teheran puts up Marcus Stroman. To make matters worse, New York hosts Atlanta next weekend. New York is three back in the wild card chase. A's, they beat the Giants to split a two-game Bay Bridge series 9-5. In football news, Giants coach Pat Shurmur reiterated the importance of limiting running back Saquon Barkley's touches in the preseason, adding he may not play at all. Giants open in Dallas September 8th, and that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. John?
Rob, thanks a lot. 6:37 on Wall Street. Coming up today, we get earnings from four companies in the S&P 500, with Walmart headlining the list. Here with a preview, here's Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Walmart has been working to improve its store operations. Those improvements, a continued focus on lower prices and an expanding online grocery service, likely supported same-store sales growth. Bloomberg Intelligence says technology has helped to unlock store productivity, and the company is on pace to achieve its online sales growth target for the year. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Jeff. It's now 6:38 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
Since 1994, all federally licensed firearms dealers have been made to conduct background checks on gun purchasers. Background checks have blocked more than 3.5 million gun sales to restricted individuals, including felons and domestic abusers. But the law has a loophole. Unlicensed private dealers don't have to run checks when they make a sale. Consequently, many criminals buy firearms from unregulated sellers via the internet or at gun shows. This two-tiered system is an insult to common sense and undermines public safety. It undermines other laws as well, including red flag laws to keep the suicidal or homicidal from buying guns. The American public overwhelmingly supports universal background checks. And earlier this year, the House passed legislation to make them a reality. Now all eyes are on Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who said he'll put background checks front and center when lawmakers return from recess in September. Voters should hold him to his word. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion Editorial Board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And Bloomberg Opinion editorials can be heard every weekday at this time. And it's coming up on 6:40 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Small Business Report. Small businesses, Uncle Sam wants you, especially if you can help with IT. According to the Small Business Administration, the federal government exceeded its small business federal contracting goal for the sixth consecutive year, awarding just over 25% of federal contract dollars to small businesses. The total, $120.8 billion to small businesses. IT, or information technology spending, is a big reason that the government reached its overall small business contracting goals. According to Bloomberg government data, in fiscal 2018, small businesses won $22 billion in prime IT contracting obligations, a $1.3 billion increase over the previous fiscal year. It's also the highest level on record. Now, in dollar terms, the largest increase was at the Pentagon. In percentage terms, the State Department led the way. The top small business IT contractor in fiscal 2018 was a firm owned by a woman, FCN Incorporated of Rockville, Maryland, with $432 million in government contracts. And that's the Bloomberg Small Business Report. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And here's the price action as it breaks down. The Dow futures now down 200 points. The S&P futures 19 points lower. That's a decline of 0.7%. And the NASDAQ futures right now 89 points lower.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Futures are falling as bonds rally once again. Let's head right over to the First Word Breaking News Desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Nathan. U.S. futures are adding to yesterday's losses as China says it will take countermeasures to the U.S. tariffs. Dow futures down 184 points, S&P's dropped 17, and NASDAQ futures declined by 82. The U.S. 10-year yield drops to 1.53%, gold is higher by 5, and Hong Kong and Shanghai both rose overnight, while European markets are under pressure, led by 2.5% losses in Italy. Back in the U.S. on the economic front, 8:30, Empire Manufacturing, Philly Fed, retail sales, and initial jobs claims. And at 10 o'clock, the NHB Housing Market Index and business inventories. After the bell last night in 13F filings, Bill Ackman reported a Berkshire Hathaway stake, while Berkshire boosted its Amazon stake to 11%. Regarding earnings this morning, look for Walmart to report around 7 a.m. And in deal news, Pivotal is in talks with VMware on a potential combination. And Morgan Stanley said that E-Trade CEO change may raise M&A prospects. Wrapping things up, Autodesk was downgraded to hold over at Deutsche Bank, and Paychex downgraded to underweight over at Morgan Stanley. Live from the First Break News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Nathan.
All right, Bill, to hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type Squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. A more than seven-hour standoff with a gunman ended after gunfire wounded six Philadelphia police officers. The incident began when police attempted to serve a narcotics warrant at a home. Shortly after midnight, the suspect, 34-year-old Maurice Hill, walked out of the home and surrendered to police. President Donald Trump is hoping to woo New Hampshire heading into 2020. The president will visit the state today to hold a re-election rally. In baseball, the Yankees down the Orioles 6-5. The Mets lost. The A's beat the Giants 9-5. The Red Sox and Nationals won. Finally, from Daybreak on the Bloomberg, it's the miracle in Moscow. Russia has its own Sully, a hero pilot named Demir Yusupov, who somehow averted disaster today after a bird strike. The captain safely landed the Crimea-bound Airbus A321 with over 230 passengers and crew on board in a cornfield near Moscow after it struck a flock of seagulls and lost power in both engines.
Wow.
Video reportedly showed the passengers remain quiet as the plane approached a vast cornfield. And then, Nathan, once it touched down safely, shouting and cheers erupted.
Yeah, you can imagine. So you're right. It does sound quite similar to the incident on the Hudson years ago with Captain Chesley Sullenberger safely landing his plane after a bird strike. Just incredible.
Oh, it is. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air, and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where it's 6:50 on Wall Street, and it's time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include President Trump appearing to tie the trade war with China to the unrest in Hong Kong and hinting at a meeting with President Xi. Mr. Trump lashing out at the Federal Reserve over, as he puts it, the crazy inverted yield curve, and former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper reportedly getting ready to end his presidential bid as soon as this morning to run for Senate. Also making news today, President Trump's bid at re-election now threatened by a slowing economy. Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter joins me now. And we're once again, Kate, seeing these indicators in the markets pointing to worries about recession. Makes you wonder whether President Trump may have a reason for lashing out at the Fed, at least as he sees it.
Absolutely. I think as the indicators are pointing towards recession, Trump's pointing the finger elsewhere. He's essentially saying, you know, this isn't my fault. Don't look at me. It's not my economy. It's all based on what we're seeing so far, as he's saying, it's all based on actions that the Fed has taken. We know the Fed has become a routine punching bag for the president, which is highly unusual based on previous presidencies. It's, you know, the Fed used to be kind of above the political fray. That's no longer the case in the Trump administration. So I think it's in some ways not surprising given what we know about Trump. But I think what we're seeing is the beginnings of Trump's narrative that we're likely to see unfold if the economy does take a downturn, particularly in the months heading up to his reelection in 2020. I think it's likely to see him point the finger at the Fed, continue to do that, and then point the fingers elsewhere as well. So this is the beginning of Trump kind of deflecting the blame.
Yeah, it'd be kind of illustrative here to sort of get a history lesson on how presidential reelection bids tend to fare ahead of economic slowdowns past.
Well, I think, I mean, all we have to do is go and look back to 1992 when, you know, Bill Clinton's campaign essentially made their one of their de facto slogans, you know, it's the economy, stupid, when, you know, that was obviously the campaign in which George H.W. Bush lost his reelection campaign to Bill Clinton. The economy was not in a great spot there, in a great spot then. And so I think that, you know, going back even further, there's always been a sensitivity to the idea that the president, while the president may not directly control the economy, presidents tend to take credit for good economies and sometimes pay a price for economic downturns, even if it's not a result of their policies. And so I think that has long been the case, that presidents are sensitive to that reality. And I think that 1992 is a good recent example of that.
Yeah. And when you mention that classic slogan, it's the economy, stupid, are you expecting then that this could be the key issue as we head into 2020 and we might could possibly see Democratic candidates try to take advantage of what's happening, not just in the economy as a whole, but in the markets?
Well, I think up until now, Democrats have really not been going that route because the economy has largely been strong under Trump's reign and so or Trump's term. And so I think that it certainly provides an opening for Democratic candidates to start making a case to voters on pocketbook issues that they might not have been able to make otherwise. The question is how much Democrats are able to capitalize on that and also how significantly voters are feeling the pinch as Election Day draws near.
What do you make of the president in at least one tweet yesterday hinting that the unrest in Hong Kong may have something to do with what's going on in the trade war with China?
So this is an interesting kind of pivot for the president. You know, he had offered some limited expressions of support for China and their reaction to the Hong Kong protests during the early days. And now we're seeing him, you know, essentially pivoting a bit and also linking it to the trade war. I think from a domestic standpoint, it makes sense in some ways for Trump to be doing this because it's part of his sort of overall vilification of China, which has worked well for him on the campaign trail. He's basically promised to stand tough against China from going back to his 2016 campaign days, and essentially painting China as a crusher of free speech and democracy and protests kind of feeds into that narrative. However, it might make it much more difficult for him to broker a deal with China when it comes to the trade war, which could have longer term implications. By linking the two, he's certain to increase suspicion of his stance on trade within Beijing, where there's already suspicion that the U.S. might be sort of under the table fueling these protests.
In the time we have left, Kate, there are growing reports that we may have one less Democrat running for president by this afternoon.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we saw for months and months the field expand and expand and expand up to close to 24 Democrats running for president. Now we're seeing it beginning to contract a bit ahead of the September debates in Houston. Former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper is likely to announce today that he's not going to run for president, potentially announcing that he will instead run for the Senate. And so he would be the first major Democratic candidate to drop out, and I think the first of potentially several others ahead of the debate in Houston in mid-September.
And just quickly, interesting to note that this comes, what, like 6 months before the first actual votes are cast?
Yeah, it is interesting because, you know, you see people run for president who never even voters never even get a chance to vote for. So this is a phenomenon every 4 years, but I think it's particularly acute this year given the size of the Democratic field.
Yeah, more than 24 at last count. Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter, thank you, as always. You can read more of these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal. Follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. 6:56 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
I'm Jonathan Bernstein, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. The smart move right now for any conservative Republican senator or governor with presidential ambitions? Challenge Donald Trump for the nomination. Not because Trump is particularly vulnerable, but look at the last two Republicans to take on incumbent presidents in the primaries. Pat Buchanan ran against President George H.W. Bush, gained a fair amount of stature, and ran a somewhat serious campaign for the 1996 nomination. Ronald Reagan challenged Gerald Ford and almost defeated him. 4 years later, Reagan won the Republican nomination and the presidency. So what about 2020? A challenge would be meaningless if it wins little or no support at all. But a conservative challenger could pick off some votes, especially if a recession hits in the next year. If Trump's reputation in the party suffers by 2024, running as a conservative against him will look good in retrospect. There's some risk, but the odds are that a solid nomination insurgency by a solidly conservative Republican could set that candidate up as the 2024 frontrunner. I'm Jonathan Bernstein. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Futures continue to fall this morning. S&P futures down 11 points. Dow futures down 144. NASDAQ futures down 62 points. 10-year Treasury yield 1.52%. The 2-year just shy of 1.51%. The 30-year still below 2% right now, 195.63. West Texas Intermediate crude oil is down 2%, 54.09 a barrel. The euro, 1.1153 against the dollar. Bloomberg Surveillance is next with Tom Keene and Lisa Abramowitz. For John Tucker, I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg.